Hello, and thanks for downloading Wax Lyrical, the advertising podcast from Wax On and the Marketing Society. And welcome to another special Business as Unusual episode, recorded remotely in our homes. Please join us as we chat about how we can help each other get through this unprecedented situation. I'm Mark Runicus, and in this episode, my Wax On colleague Paul Jacobs and I are joined by Victoria Fox, the chief executive of AAR. Now, I grew up in the creative agency world, knowing the AAR as an intermediary, a matchmaker who helps clients find their right agency, and vice versa, of course, more often than not, through a meticulously planned pitch. But today, Victoria talks to us about an AAR which is now a consultancy, which she says is focusing on helping businesses design what she calls their marketing ecosystems. And that shift from intermediary to consultancy is largely down to Victoria, who joined the AAR about a year ago after 20 years in agencies. Victoria is an active member of WACL, which is the Women in Advertising and Communications London, and she sits on their executive committee and is chair of the WACL Future Leaders Award. And for 2 years in a row, she was named a global champion of women in business by the Financial Times. As is usual at the moment, we all met on Zoom, and Paul and I first asked Victoria about her personal journey from agency to consultancy.
25 years agency side, have a passion for the industry, but was getting to the point where I felt increasingly uncomfortable that I wasn't able to offer more neutral advice, I think. So I had mouths to feed in a specific discipline, and my relationships with the clients, I think it was harder and harder to be able to offer the advice that might not actually have been the answer my agency could offer up. And I think I went on a journey with taking on the sponsor of the diversity agenda within MSC Saatchi globally. I think that really changed my direction as well. And so I leapt without a job to go to, which I think is a terrifying thing to do, but it's one in hindsight I can recommend enormously, because I think what I needed to do was take time to really think about what I wanted to do next and explore things that would never have just been a straightforward leap from one job to the next and a headhunt, which is how I've always moved from job to job in the past. I had 6 months where I was having conversations with just really random and a very broad set of people, and ended up in a conversation with Kerry Glazer, who was president of WACL, of which I'm a member, and I was just talking to her about the things I've just described. And I guess serendipity played its hand, because Kerry was looking for her successor. And while I would never have set out to think the answer to what I'm looking for is AAR, the answer to what I was looking for was AAR. and so went through a full process with them. And every time I met with them, I thought there's more and more I could do with this role and with the platform that AAR offers, and so much integrity and trust in a brand that's been around for 45 years, but so much opportunity to evolve and shape it for the market that we now find ourselves in.
Having run creative businesses, what's it like running a, my description, consultancy then now?
On one hand, joyful, because I can come up with lots of ideas that I don't have to then actually implement and drive through a thing, because I think we get so boxed from an agency perspective into you're a suit or you're a planner or you're a creative. And I think what I'm finding and I'm loving about the role at AAR is actually it's very strategic. And while I have grown up as a suit, I guess, in the advertising industry, I've always been drawn to the strategic answers that need to play out for clients, and here it's much more strategic than it is operational, which I'm loving. I love people, I love the relationships, and I like making the ideas happen. So I think I've always believed that account handling is the most important role in the agency, because you have to be a strategist and a creative and a partner to the clients to make it actually land and come to life.
As a mum and a wife, how are you finding lockdown? Because I know lots of people it's going very various ways. I'm kind of enjoying it, but how are you finding it?
The answer to that is it's a bit of a roller coaster. On a Monday, I might feel like I'm on top of the world and nailing being a CEO at the same time as teaching a year three and a year five student. And then on a Wednesday, it's all gone horribly wrong. I think that it is a big challenge to have two working parents in the house, both of us CEOs of companies, and two children under the age of nine. I say that, though, and then the other side of it is it's wonderful because I am around and I'm able to share meal times and go for a walk each day with them. And I heard Jeff Dodds on your podcast last week, and I loved how he described that really this is a time for mindfulness in action. And that's right. When you're living so in the now, what you get out of it is immense. However, when my mind wanders to the picture, it's a really scary time. And so I think it's a mix for me. There's lots of in the now positives. There's a lot of challenges in the juggle. And sometimes I feel so much guilt that I'm not able to just sit down with Annie and help her at the age of seven with her schoolwork, because she deserves that. But we're making it work. And I think that sometimes I think it gets a bit overwhelming when you look at the bigger picture on the economics and the health, and you realise that it's a really tough time to have elderly parents. And he'd kill me for saying that, because my dad is so not an elderly person in spirit. But he has cancer and he's being treated monthly, and it's terrifying. So I think it depends what time of day, it depends what day of the week, and it depends whether I'm trying to be in the now or looking up and probably scaring myself with looking ahead. I'm sure it's the same for everyone.
What are you hearing from brand owners in terms of their confidence and what their plans are at the moment, Victoria?
I think it depends how healthy their balance sheet is. I think that clients are falling into one of three categories: either decimated by COVID, i.e. their product is not actually able to be sold at the moment, restaurants, sporting events, etc. Those that fall into the category where the business is harmed by it but not decimated, which is the majority. And then those that are genuinely trying to keep up with demand, because the demand through this crisis has exploded their category. So it depends where they fall on that scale. But the question over whether they should be spend through it, I think, again, it comes back to a question of, I think, marketing. Yes, I should continue. Advertising, don't confuse the two. And I think there is a need more than ever to keep talking to your customers and connecting with your customers and driving advocacy, I would say, through this period. But it feels a very sensitive time to be selling and to be pushing your agenda above the societal agenda.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about agencies and what you're seeing. You're in I definitely describe as a unique position, having been in them for a long time and now very much working alongside them. But focusing on lockdown, are you seeing any positive changes to agencies, whether it's structural or where they're behaving? And we'll come on to ask around kind of a very well-known example, which is what publicists have done recently with their money back guarantee. But yeah, to start with, any positive changes you're seeing in agencies?
Oh, so many, and so many things to hold on to. I think one of the joys that I'm seeing out of COVID, if there are any, is collectivism and coming together as a community. We're running as the AAR town halls twice a week, which is just bringing together agencies. And I think the combined optimism from that group is immense. And I think what we're seeing is an increasing honesty about challenges they face, and an increasing freeing up of the creative talents that live within those organisations. Because I think pre-COVID, everyone was very boxed into their swim lanes, their disciplines, their remits, their procurement boxes. And actually what we're hearing is people are just coming together collaboratively to answer clients' business challenges, genuinely big business challenges that have been thrown up. How do I show up in this market? How do we pivot? How do we amend our tone of voice? Because I think tone of voice is increasingly important in the market we find ourselves in. And I think we're hearing that agencies are putting their best foot forward to just answer the question, regardless whether they come from a media background or a customer background or an advertising agency, and looking at how they creatively help their brands to answer those questions. And I think that's immense, and there should be something that continues. I think we're seeing a stripping away of layers in decision making, which allows things to accelerate and move. I think that's both on the agency side and on brand owners. So you're seeing what we talked about earlier, that top table discussion happening. So big ideas, and I don't mean comms ideas, big ideas for how the business needs to pivot are being heard by the people that can make that happen. And things are happening quicker than anyone could imagine possible. And I think that's something that is, I've heard many people talk about the fact that back to normal is not the right way to look at this. Actually, what we need to do is grab hold of the things that have been accelerated and are positives, and leap into the future rather than back to the normal. Yeah. And some of those things are, I guess, bravery, agility. And agility is such a nebulous word, but in this context, the ability to sprint towards a change quickly is positives that are emerging both from brand owners and agencies. And I guess the other thing I'm seeing is just a brilliance in leadership. I know that there was an article this week about leadership and in some of the networks. And I think actually what I see is, forget whether you're an independent, small, medium or large, or in a network, I think leadership is leadership, and you're seeing brilliance. And it is really hard to be a leader at this time because there is no certainty. There's no rock to hold on to. We often have to plan far out, but we have things to hold on to, and there's not a lot of that. And I think the humanity and the authenticity and the just genuine energy that's coming from the agency leaders that we're seeing is brilliant and hard.
Yeah. The publicist money back guarantee. Can we get AAR's opinion on that, please?
I think that we have never had a better opportunity to reframe how agencies charge for their services. And on the note of publicist pact, I'm not a fan, if I'm honest, but I understand why they've done it. And it's bold and it's confident in many ways. But I think what it does do is accelerate the pain needs to sit on the agency side only, and that we are seeing an increasing risk being taken on. It's not a partnership proposition. It's if you don't like what you see, you get your money back. And I can understand why, because they believe in themselves so much and they think they're going to show such tangible growth, and that the Epsilon data can help them show that. All brilliant stuff, but why should it be totally at the risk of the agency? And increasingly we're having conversations with really enlightened procurement people, had one this morning, where actually I think that there needs to be different types of models for different parts of the value exchange. So there are parts that are commoditized, and we have to be honest about that, like some of the production deliverables. And so the input-based models work there. You've then got an increasing need to have a more output-based model, where actually if you're a genuine partner wanting to answer business challenges for your client, don't ask me for the FTEs that are going to answer that question. Give me the question, I'll give you a price for the answer, and we need to decide what the right capabilities are to put on that challenge. So the answer isn't always a TV ad or a social answer. It's actually the answer that's right for that question. And so give that challenge to the agency to solve and bring the right people together on, but pay them for the output of the activity and the question you're asking them to answer. And then the third level, which I think comes all the way up the chain in terms of needing to drive partnership between and joint KPIs between brand owners and agencies. I think it, as growth becomes elusive, if isn't there a simplicity in an outcome-based model where everyone is driving towards growth KPIs is having a handshake which says at the end of the year we're all driving for, whether it be an increase in share of the market, and that if you genuinely believe that partner has played its part in delivering that, that there is some performance-based agreement as well. So I think there's different models for different parts of the value exchange, but I think with Publicis Pact, what you're seeing is that's not a partnership deal. That is, we'll take the risk, and if we've delivered, thank you very much, we'll take payment from you. And I think it's a dangerous spiral, because I think we need to address the balance in partnership more and more, rather than this driving agencies into a supplier mindset.
Pitches and pitching. From the AR's perspective, did you have longer term ambitions to evolve the pitch process? It's a well spoken about topic.
Yes, it's a simple answer. And we have kicked off, I think it's next week, two of our town halls are having a debate around how to evolve the pitch process. But I think it's important to also see the pitch is one tool in the toolkit. It's not the answer to every question. And increasingly, clients don't call pitches on a whim. And I think someone asked me the other day, isn't it a bit frivolous to be pitching at the moment? Well, actually, if you think about the question in a different way, which is their businesses are pivoting at the moment. They need to pivot to answer consumer demand and to answer the market dynamic that we're in. And they need capabilities to be able to answer new products and services and new ways to go to market. And so often a pitch need comes up because there's a gap in the capabilities that they have. And no one's going to say, if only we could, if we had, but no, we mustn't go to market and run a pitch. And it also suggests that clients are running pitches and stopping their day-to-day work. They never do. They're running both at the same time. And I think we are seeing clients increasingly looking at how they have the right capabilities, both in-house with their partners, how that blend is working together. We're calling that right housing, where the capabilities need to sit to answer the market challenges. And if there's gaps, then there is a need for a pitch to select the right partners. But pitch needs to be bespoke to the situation rather than one size fits all. The size of the prize needs to come into the equation. Is there an opportunity to make it more workshop style rather than giving away the IP in the pitch? It's such a nuanced debate, and I think that we're opening up the opportunities for agencies to give their point of view on how to evolve it. But I think it's important to look at it case by case as well, and for us to be designing processes that fit the question that's in front of us each time.
How are things at the moment? You're still busy with pitches? Are people still pitching?
We've been gathering data across the business on not just AAR pitches, but across the market on the level of activity through the last 8 weeks. And there is activity. It's definitely down on last year. But what we are seeing is anything that was already in train on the whole is going ahead and seeing itself through. And then there was quite a slowdown of new people asking the question and coming to market with a new question for a little while around Easter. But in the last couple of weeks, we've really started to see new inquiries coming through as people realise they can't hold off. We are seeing green shoots in the pitching space. The area of our business that's busiest is our design consultancy, where we're looking at how to help clients to design the right marketing ecosystems. That is a busy area, because I think people are looking at how they need to change and how they need, therefore, the right partners to come out of this fighting in the right shape.
One thing I am concerned about as we come out of lockdown is that those of us, you are one of us, who are focused on inclusion in our community, that will drop down the agenda. I'm certainly personally committed to make sure it doesn't. I know you're passionate about the work you do for WACL. How do you think we make sure it doesn't slip down the agenda?
The one thing that's coming out of this is that inclusive leadership skills are being tested, and that as we push further and further into our leadership skills, because we've got people who we're managing who are challenged at the moment. They might have kids at home and they're having to juggle work and home life. They might be living abroad and have no family around them. They might be living on their own. They might have mental health challenges, and we need to be aware of them as leaders. And I hope in all of that, we are starting to see that we have to carry those inclusive leadership qualities through and out the other side and really start to embed them as our central way of managing talent. And I think if we do that, we will help to drive the inclusion agenda forward. But there is no doubt in my mind that that isn't the way across the board. And so we have to really remind people not to forget the D&I agenda in all of the changes that they're having to make, because otherwise we will go backwards and the numbers will slip. And it isn't a numbers game ultimately, but it is something that we have to bring up to the fore. Otherwise we're relying on too few inclusive leaders to realise that this is a massive business opportunity, not just something that's a tick box sitting over in the corner.
You mentioned leadership and the WACL Future Leaders thing. I think it's a great idea. Tell us more about it. I know you're passionate about that.
I've been a member of WACL for 7 years, and for me, I've lent into WACL over the last few years far more. When Kerry, who was the president at the time, when we changed our purpose, which was to drive gender equality in the industry and really push for support and campaigning, which has never been as strong as it is now within WACL. And one of the pillars of our campaigning and support is WACL Future Leaders Award, which has been around 15 years, founded by Tess Alps. And it's a very simple premise. We have given away about 250,000 in bursaries over the last 15 years to about 300 women who are have identified gaps in their development that are holding them from getting to the next level. So we are identifying really practically things that will help them to reach their full potential and push as many brilliant women up the chain. And I think the reason I love it, I've been chair of it for the last 2 years, is because we run at 1,000 miles an hour and rarely do we stop and give ourselves a chance to really reflect on what success looks like for us personally. And I think the process of applying for the Future Leader Award is exactly that. It's that time to invest in yourself, stop, look at yourself, what you want to achieve. And it might be success is different for everyone, but define what you want to achieve and then spot the gaps that you need some help with. We all need help. And then that is what it's all about, is us trying to help as many people to fill those gaps as possible. And I think women are often the first, they don't always ask for help or give themselves that time to reflect. So for me, it's one of the most rewarding things I do. And we've seen such incredible talent and really diverse talent, because we push really hard to get out of the bubble of London, to reach any age group, because age is no barrier either. You can be a leader at any age in your career. And we want to reach people who might not have known about WACL because they're not in the right groups. We're trying to push those boundaries. And so I would encourage anyone who knows someone who has just got huge potential to apply and give themselves that investment of time.
Have you ever either consciously or subconsciously been aware of prejudice, either as a woman or as a mum, or, you know, any of the pillars of inclusion that we talk about?
If you'd have asked me before I had kids, I'd have said, I don't need to be treated differently. I've had the most amazing male sponsors in my career. I've had so much support, and I didn't really see a lot of challenges. But then the two things that changed: one, having children definitely opened my eyes to the fact that it's suddenly not quite such a meritocracy, and you have to fight quite hard. And the other is taking on the role as sponsor of D&I at Embassy Saatchi. I think that I realised how privileged I am, and how my lived experience, even though I haven't necessarily had challenges, they exist everywhere. And opening your eyes to that is, once you open your eyes, you can't shut them. I did a course called Fearless Futures, which, if you don't know it, I would recommend to anyone. And it's an incredible course called Design for Inclusion. And it teaches you critical thinking. And I think what we were in a mixed cohort. It was 3 days, 72 hours in a room together. And I was hearing lived experiences that, frankly, I wasn't aware of. But hearing and learning has changed my life, honestly, because I think it doesn't matter if you have experienced it. And often we won't have done, but we have to listen for other people's lived experiences and realise that as an industry, we're a bit cookie cutter, and we need to allow the change to happen that will bring in voices that are different to the cookie cutter, and that will actually thrive in this environment, because you're creating environments where they feel psychologically secure to actually express themselves and be heard.
You've talked an awful lot about agencies and their clients pivoting. I'm guessing that with a paucity of pitches, it's time the AR pivoted. What are your plans?
The complexity in the market, the proliferation of channels, the elusive growth that all brands are after, these are increasingly complex challenges, and never before has there been more need for neutral advice and the awful term an intermediary. But I don't think it looks anything like what an intermediary springs to mind in people's heads. And that's how I've looked at it, is what does an intermediary need to look like to help clients through the complexities in today's market from a neutral standpoint? And I think it's about helping them to design ecosystems, marketing ecosystems that are adaptive and able to compete in the market we find ourselves in. And that's a combination of looking at their own internal capabilities and then how they build partner landscapes in a blended way with themselves to answer those questions. So we have established three practices over the last 12 months and are working with clients across three practices of design, build and drive. And design being the designing of marketing ecosystems, helping clients to build adaptive marketing ecosystems. Build, which is our, I guess, where AR has been famous, is helping to build partnerships and the pitching area. And drive, because I think the start point is not you get these ecosystems and these partners in place. That's the start, not the end, because increasingly it requires a lot to help to get those partnerships thriving and driving at high performance. So behavior change and how you get measurement in place so that you're all driving towards the same goals. So those three practices are established and thriving, and I think they will interlink with each other, but ultimately what we're doing is helping clients to maximize their competitiveness and their capabilities to drive growth in this market.
One thing that stumps a lot of our guests when I ask them is, what is your favourite TV ad of all time? So, Victoria, you're on the spot.
There's so many, but the one that stands out for me is Guinness Surfer. It's stunning. Good things come to those who wait. Just fantastic. A genius piece of creativity.
Ahab says, I don't care who you are, here's to your dream. The old sailors return to the bar. Here's to you, Ahab! And the fat drummer hit the beat with all his heart.
Victoria Fox, Chief Executive of AAR, thanks so much for chatting to us. And a great favourite ad, that classic Guinness Surfer campaign, which I'm sure often gets voted as one of the best ads of all time, in fact. Can you believe it's more than 20 years old? I think it was made in 1999 by AMV, and reputedly the film cost £1 million to make, and half of that went on post-production to add in the horses in the surf. It's a brilliant example of identifying a beautifully simple truth in a product that can become a huge creative idea. The truth was that it takes a while to pour a Guinness. And that's no bad thing, because good things come to those who wait. That's it from us. We'll be back in a few weeks with more business as unusual conversations from the world of advertising and marketing. Meanwhile, please leave us a review on iTunes, and don't forget to share this podcast with your friends. See you soon. Bye-bye.